that I can teach love and grace and have it here and have it all through the church with the staff, with my neighbors, everything else. Couldn't have it with my own family. Couldn't have it with my own in-laws. And I can. So thank you for being patient with me. But you know what? I wasn't going to fake it. I just wasn't going to fake it. I was letting God do his thing, and he did. So it's pretty cool. So anyway, I'm living love by him. I have no idea where that's going to go, but I'm just along for the ride. And I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to work, food, and control. I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and depression and panic. So that's where I am. This is the last in the third part series. Next week, Azure D's up, going to give us a part two of her story, so it's going to be fun. Looking forward to that. So this is the third in a three-part series on just where we live. And the first part of the series was what we thought we signed up for. And we had all kinds of expectations that life was going to be fair and that we'd be rewarded for our good efforts and that we would vastly improve, you know, almost instantly or over a short period of time, we'd vastly improve and just get right next door to perfect, you know, because we'll all be perfect someday. I have no proof of this, okay? But I think that when we get to heaven, we're not going to be perfect. What would be the fun in that? Really. I think we'll be exploring grace for the rest of eternity. So anyway, perfection is highly overrated or whatever. So those are our expectations that we thought life should be fair, and that we should be rewarded for our good work, for our good efforts, and that we would vastly improve, you know, rapidly vastly improve. And then we woke up to the fact that life is not fair and that we are not rewarded for our good efforts. The only way we're rewarded is if we make the machine run good, and as soon as you become an obsolete part or a broken part, you're discarded and replaced with another part. It's just our society. It's where we live. So we woke up to the fact that life is not fair. We woke up to the fact that we will not be rewarded for our good stuff. And we woke up to the fact that if we're going to change, it will not be our efforts that do it. It'll only be grace transforming us. And so it's probably not going to be in our timing. And it's probably not going to look like anything we think it's going to look like. I think that's what's cool about grace, is that you hand a blueprint over to God and say, this is what I would like you to do with my life. And God giggles and shuffles it in the pile of all the other blueprints he's been issued and says, no, I've got this. Don't need a blueprint. I can do this with my eyes closed, my hands tied behind my back. I got it. God does the transforming. So, tonight I just want to say, and we kind of touched on this last week, but tonight I just want to talk a little bit about what grace says about all this. And if you're tired of hearing the word grace, can I just talk about that for a second? Because we now have this podcast that Wayne and I and Jason do called On Grace. I think I'm going to eventually write a book on grace. In my computer, I literally have this growing file, and I call it my grace bucket. So all the insights and thoughts and discoveries I make on grace, I pour over into that grace bucket, and we'll see where that's going to go. And my lessons, Sunday after Sunday, that I teach are on grace. And it could be that we're thinking, okay, enough on grace. Grace works for me for several reasons. But let me try to explain why I keep using this term and why if we have Wayne up here, he's going to use it too, I think. The word God has so many different interpretations to so many different people. I was abused in the name of God. I was abused in the name of God. People did unfair, mean things to me and said, God told me to do this. So I struggle with God sometimes. Not struggle with him as a person. I struggle with the word God sometimes. I struggle sometimes with the word love because love has been so perverted by Hollywood, by the sex trade, you know, the word has been used and abused. It means to some people manipulation. It means to some people domination. It means to some people, I'm going to inflict pain on you. I love you. I'm going to inflict. Love has been, the word love, not what love is, but the word love has been used and abused so many different ways. They have not gotten to grace yet. Nobody has gotten a hold of the word grace and polluted it yet, that I know of. And think about that. Nobody has gotten that word and flushed it down the sewer or tried to mix it with some kind of toxicity. If they have, don't tell me because I don't want to know. La, 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 la. So that's why I keep talking, using the word grace, because, and the other thing about grace, and this is one more thing, and then we'll continue with the lesson. The other thing about grace is somebody explained grace as the energy that the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit have between the three of them in the Trinity. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like in an atom, the energy that is between the proton and the neutron and the electron, that energy that keeps them, because by all rights, they should either stick together or they should explode. And yet they cooperate because there's an energy there. And it's the same thing with the Trinity. And so I'm finding more and more that when I encounter you all and you encounter me, there's something going on. There's an energy that goes on in our encounters. I'm kind of used to it with you all. I'm kind of used to it with the people I work with here at Broadway. We have a kick-ass staff here. Can I hear an amen, Lewis? I mean, this is the best place I have ever worked. And these are the best people I've ever worked with. We have problems, we have issues, no doubt. But this is the best place I've ever worked. So I'm used to the grace energy there. What shocked me this week was to be able to go to be with my people, my extended family, who I have a bad history with, and there was that grace energy. And I've seen it between my sisters on Facebook messaging. I got to watch or listen in, eavesdrop on two of them making amends to each other on our family forum, and I was like, yes, yes, the energy of grace, you know. And then to go back to Robbie's home of origin, very strict, very legalistic, religious people, and yet there was grace, the encounters that we had. So I'm finding grace in places I didn't expect to find it. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to stick with that word for a while. And if you get tired of it, just you substitute your own word in there for it. So what does grace have to offer us? I know what I thought I was going to get, and I know what I woke up to. So grace walks in the room and says, but here's what I've got for you. So what is grace? Just got a picture of Santa Claus with a sack full of gifts. So Santa Grace walks in with his sack full of gifts, and now he's going to unpack them. Ho, ho, ho. Grace offers us forgiveness that brings peace and reconciliation. There is forgiveness of the old legalistic kind that says, okay, since you said you were sorry, I'm obligated to tell you that I forgive you. And officially, the debt has been paid, but I can't stand you. I don't want to have a relationship with you. But legally, I'm obligated because of what the Bible says, because what my church tells me, I'm obligated to forgive you. Don't want to, but I'm obligated because you apologized, so I have to forgive you. Not talking about that kind of grace. What about the kind of grace that brings true peace and true reconciliation? It doesn't always happen. If somebody has abused you and they still want to abuse you, it's kind of hard to have peace and reconciliation with those people. But there are relationships that have a nasty past that can be reconciled. I'm Exhibit A just last week. I didn't think it could happen. It can happen. But broken relationships where parties say, you know what, let's just clean this all off. It's not a debt that has to be paid. It's just, yeah, we did that. in our younger days, in our stupid days, in our stubborn days, in our prideful days, we did that. Sure, we did. All parties admit we did that. That's not who we are today. And that's not what we want to define our relationship today. So we can have peace and reconciliation of a far deeper kind than, would you sign this document that says we're okay? Okay, I'll sign the document. All right, we're good. This reconciliation, I think, happens several different ways. I don't want to dwell on this too long. Maybe I'll put this in terms of a question. Can we forgive ourselves for having such crazy and wild expectations all those years that stole all those years from us? Can we have peace with ourselves and say, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I lived with all those, I don't know what they were. Some of them might be monetary expectations, relational expectations, religious, I don't know. I don't know where you come from. But can I, Wendell, can I look myself in the mirror and say, dude, I forgive you for all that silliness. I forgive you. I want to reconcile with the new Wendell. And I want to go on from here with the new Wendell. Can we do that to ourselves? People say all the time, I can't forgive myself. I know God forgave me. I know so-and-so forgave me. But I can't forgive myself. Something beautiful that grace does is it allows us to look ourselves in the mirror and saying, yes, I know I did that. And I know I was that kind of person. That is not who I am anymore. And move on from there. So it's not a legal forgiveness. It's being reconciled with who I am. And just because I revisit some of that misbehavior or some of those silly thoughts or some of those silly feelings doesn't mean I'm going back to that. Do you ever get that feeling? I screwed up again. I did that same thing again. That doesn't mean we're returning to that. We need to think about this. We need to think about this. Because we're really convinced that if we repeat a mistake that we have done 1,000 times, we're becoming that person again. That is not the case. Grace moves us on beyond that. So we can find reconciliation with ourselves and a peace with a new kind of life, even though there are bumps in the road. Even though they're tiny relapses, it's okay. We've got each other. Good grief. We've got each other. Hey, so-and-so, I screwed up. I need some encouragement. I need some help right now. You've got that in an instant. You've got that on speed dial right here in this room. A lot of churches, you can't do that. A lot of places, you can't do that. With this group, you can. Well, you can have reconciliation with those who have messed up your expectations. I mean, we have to make peace with ourselves. But we can, you know, you can be reconciled with people who have either resisted your expectations or enabled your silly ones that did you more harm than good. And, you know, sometimes I think we need to be reconciled with God. A lot of people have trouble with that. Well, I've never been mad at God. I could never be mad at God. Well, some people can, you know. If you're one that can't be mad at God, good for you. Good for you. But there's some people who are mad at God, viciously angry at God, and we need to talk that through, if that's the case. I have been angry at God. If that makes me a terrible pagan, bound for hell, no chance, then so be it. But I had to get real with God before I could get good with God. So I got real with him. And so maybe you need to find some reconciliation with him. But that's what grace offers. First of all, grace offers this forgiveness that I really think we need to understand. Forgiveness is not a judicial term. Not that so-and-so signed it and I signed it, so we're all good. We made some sort of deal. Forgiveness is not a judicial term. Forgiveness is a relational term. And the church has used it too long to be a judicial term. It's a relational term. That's what we do with each other when we hurt each other. We forgive, we make amends, we apologize, and the relationship is remade. Grace does that. Grace offers us hope. I've really done a lot of thinking about hope lately. Most of us have trusted our expectations to to give us a really, really good life. People who whine all the time, I want to ask them sometime, would you sit down with a piece of paper and literally describe for me on this piece of paper, write out, my life would be perfect if, and have them write down all, if all these expectations came true, everything that I want, if I could write my own script, write my own people into the script, write my own job, my own standard of living, my own location where I live, everything. I want to write my own story. If God gave that to them in the blink of an eye, they wouldn't like it. Almost guarantee you, they wouldn't like it. Because our expectations are liars. They're liars. And we tend to think if I got everything I expected, my life would be the best. I would have zero complaints, you know. Well, now I'm on the other side of too good. I don't like this, you know. I mean, that's what we would probably do. Here's what's hitting me about grace, is that grace has something far richer and far more profound and far deeper and far wider and far more life-changing and transforming than anything I ever imagined or expected out of life. If I sat down and I wrote out my paper of what I thought would be a perfect life, it would pale in comparison to what grace has in store for me. If you put the two down next to each other, you would say, that is just silly. Why would I want that? You know, it's beanie weenies or steak and lobster. Some of y'all may really like beanie weenies. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to insult your favorite food. I'm just using that as mine. I'd prefer steak and lobster because I'd never get it. But anyway, it's not she doesn't fix it. It's just that we don't live there. So you think about, I expect so much out of life. And grace, if you plunge in, says, you don't have a clue. You don't have a clue how good this can get. You don't have a clue how rich this can get. And just when you think you're plunging the depths, just when you think, okay, this is as good as it gets, grace winks and says, you ain't seen nothing yet. I want that. I want that. And it's not always goodies. It's not always feel good. And it's not always happy, happy. You know? That's not what it is. That's why I use the word rich. It's richer. It's deeper. It's wider. It's more profound. It's more life-changing. More transformative than our wildest expectation we could ever come up with. So we have this hope. Oh, I got to hurry. Okay. Grace offers us possibilities that our expectations blocked. If it's true that grace is richer and deeper than our expectations, then our expectations, if we cling to them, are blocking us from getting this. Does that make sense? I don't remember this. My dad tells this story. I mean, he told it when he was alive. He said that one Christmas, it was at a house we lived on, I remember, it was 114 Asbury Avenue in Wilmore, Kentucky. We heated with coal, I still remember that. And we had a little bitty back porch, and the Christmas tree was in the front room. So I was on the back porch, Christmas tree is the front room, toys all wrapped, you know, Christmas time. And we had several kids. So it's a big pile of gifts around the tree. Always had a natural tree when we were growing up. We didn't have any money, so we'd go out and cut a cedar tree. So we had natural tree, smelled real good, decorated up. Christmas morning, time to open gifts. And I had found an old pot that my mother had thrown out, just an old cooking pot, and found a stick. And I was out on the back deck, we didn't have decks back then, but it was on the back porch, and I was making the funkiest, best rhythm on that pot, just beating the stuffings out of it. And I was getting down. You know, I was having fun. And Dad said they came out and said, it's time to open gifts. And it was like, no, I'll be there in a minute. I kept beating on that pot. Kept having the best time beating on that pot. Here I had all these gifts in here from my grandparents, my aunts and uncles, my mom and dad, all this stuff in here. But I had this pot and I had this stick and I was wailing on it. I was the best, having the best time ever. My expectation probably, I'm stretching the story a little now. My expectation was probably to come up with some great new beat that I could share with John Bonham of Led Zeppelin or, you know, Ringo Starr of the Beatles or whatever. Had some new beat coming up. Those were my expectations. I'm lying on that part. Those were my expectations. I was stuck in that. Those expectations were blocking me for what was waiting for me inside. If you cling to your expectations, and here's a test. How long have you been waiting for this to come true? How long have you been waiting for this to happen? You're wishing for something, and there's some sort of breakthrough. There's something I need somebody to say to me, or I need somebody to do, or there's some promotion I need, or there's some increase in salary, or whatever. How long have you been waiting on that? How long have you been waiting for your ship to come in? How long have you been waiting on your dreams to come true, your expectations to unfold in the way you think they should unfold? How long have you been waiting? Everybody knows what the next question is. And how's that working for you? You know? Wendell, stop beating on the pan. I'm inside. It's warm, it's dry, and you have presence. So a lot of times our expectations block us from receiving what grace has in store for us. And here's the last thing, and I don't want to dwell on this. This is, we ought to have a whole other series on this. Do you know how beautiful you are? I never saw that. When I was a pastor of a church, I would look around a group of people like this, and I would say, now how can I use so-and-so to do this in the church? I've got these projects I want to get done in the church, and I've got these programs and these missions that we need to do. Who can give the money? Who are the deep pockets? I need to make sure I locate them so I can schmooze them. We need their money. And then who has gifts and talents that we could use this way and that? My whole thing was, how can I plug you into the machine? I was doing it for Jesus, though. You know, I thought that gave me a free pass. I was doing it for Jesus. I didn't look at the beauty in people. I never looked at who they really were, and I never listened to what they were truly saying. And I missed it. 25 years of ministry, and I missed it. All that time I could have been seeing it and hearing it, but I missed it. And when I come here and I talk with you all and I listen to you all, now because of grace, now I'm seeing beauty. I'm seeing wondrous creations of God. I'm seeing wisdom. I'm seeing depth. I'm seeing creativity. I'm seeing relational skills. I'm seeing peace and joy and freedom. And I'm seeing all these things that I always missed. And so what grace says about your expectations, what it says about your life here and now, is it says you can be reconciled with yourself. You can hope again. Shove your expectations out of the way so that grace can do its thing. But one of the biggest things is grace is saying your relationships, the same ones you've always had. You don't have to change out the people. Think about that. You don't have to change out the people. The same relationships you've always had can be completely new because now you're not looking to use the other person for your purposes, but you are looking for the beauty of Jesus in them, and you're looking for the wisdom in them, and you're looking for all the good things that God has invested in that person. And when you see it, especially in a younger person, when you see it and you call it out, and you say, did you know you're this way? And you see that younger person, you see that in me? Yes, I do. Don't lie to them. You're not doing them any good when you lie to them. But if you see that beauty, call it out. Call it forth and celebrate it. You've just made somebody's life. You may have changed the course of their whole history just because you saw the beauty and you spoke it out and you celebrated it. And you can't do that without grace. As long as you're judging and critiquing and trying to use them in your machine, none of that's going to happen. But when you're looking for the beauty and you're calling it out and you're celebrating. You see what I mean? How deep is this going to get? How far is this going to go? I don't know. But I'm on this ride for the duration. I'm not getting off this train. I want to see how far it goes, how rich it gets, how cool it gets. Because every time I think I've got some kind of handle on it, God blows me out of the water. I'm thinking, okay, now we'll have to rewrite all that. So the grace bucket just keeps getting bigger and bigger on my computer. But I'm still going to try to write a book someday, even though I know it's not going to tell all that's going to need to be told. You all are the greatest. This is so cool to stand up here and share this stuff. It's so cool because I feel like you're sharing it too, because I've learned almost all of it from you. You've taught it to me. You've been patient with me and taught it to me. And I get up here and kind of parrot it back to you. It just doesn't get any cooler than that. And now I get to play one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite singers. It's an Eric Clapton piece called Change the World.